Welcome to the All People Podcast, where we talk all people all the time. I'm your host, Elisa Southall. My goal is to improve candidate and employee experiences as well as company cultures throughout U.S. employers. We do this by leading with empathy, diversity, inclusion, equality, teamwork, and transparency. Come on this journey with me. Are you looking for an out-of-the-box solution for hiring talent? Look no further than the secret formula of hiring talent, It's not so secret. My ebook. I published this through Book Boom Learning, and this ebook covers a variety of topics all in the hiring space. I've worked with many hiring managers who all say, what is the secret formula of hiring talent? Well, I'm here to walk you through the hiring process, investing in your community, eliminating antiquated hiring practices, being the leader in pay, leveraging your resources, and success being only a few changes away. I think that if you are anybody who is looking to hire talent right now, maybe struggling to hire talent, this could be a really good resource for you. Let's change the game of hiring talent. Get rid of those old antiquated ways that we interview and go through the hiring process. And let's make it fresh and invigorating to get new talent and to get them in a more creative way. Go out today and purchase The Secret Formula of Hiring Talent, It's Not So Secret by Elisa Southall. That's me. It's only $8.99 on Book Boom Learning. I hope you guys enjoy the read. Let me know what you think. Drop a review or two on either the Book Boom Learning page or on my website. Let me know what you think of the ebook. Thank y'all. Bye. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of All People Podcast, where we talk all people all the time. As always, I am your host, Elisa Southall, and I have the great privilege of being here today with Tiffany Castaño from Sefer.
Hey, Lisa, thank you for having me.
I'm so glad you're here today. So just so that everybody knows, Sefer, it stands for Cultivating the Evolution of Professional HR. And if that doesn't tell you totally what Tiffany's love is, then I'm going to let her, you know, explain it a little bit more in depth, but I think you'll get it just right from there, cultivating that professional HR. So tell us a little bit more about what you do and why you do it.
Sure. Thank you for that invitation. So it's interesting, and I appreciate you sharing what the acronym is for, because as I was trying to figure out, well, what should the company name be? This was a longer, more difficult process than I expected, but decided to use an acronym for all the things that I think make up what HR should be. And I'm very passionate about moving HR forward. So Sefer is an HR consultancy that is based in Pittsburgh, and I support small to medium businesses, both in the for-profit and non-profit sectors. And that's super exciting, inside Pittsburgh, outside of Pittsburgh, really helping them to build their culture, to truly cultivate the culture where people want to stay, as I often describe it. And I'm also passionate about making sure that as HR professionals, we're seen as strategic and kind of culture keepers, so to speak. Not that it all falls on us, but people often think, oh, HR is just there to hire and fire or to do all these transactional things. And I see it as part of my responsibility and always have to move the profession forward. So that's a bit about what I do.
I love that. You know, I think we're moving, part of that change that you're seeing is us moving to that people ops title, right? That people operations is becoming more of the strategic, right? People focused type role, where that HR sort of mindset was always, you're there to keep us out of legal trouble and you're here to do tasks. And it's like, yes, but I do way more than that.
Yes.
And so I love, you know, you talked about the culture piece and wanting everybody to feel like they can be in an organization, and, you know, cultivating that is super important, but also maintaining it. And so when you're talking with your clients, right, I assume you have a big focus on DEIB.
Yes. Yes. You assume correctly. It is actually a Sefer value as well.
And for those people that don't know, DEIB stands for diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. And so when you're helping companies, you know, sort of make this change or move the dial forward, what are you really talking to them about in terms of, you know, culture and DEIB?
I'm so glad you asked this, because often what I'm finding is that people think, oh, this is such a tough endeavor. It's going to cost us a ton of money. And really, you know, the reason that I fold everything that I do under DEIB principles and why culture is so important is because they are linked. And I look at culture as dynamic. It's everything from, you know, how, what your mission, vision, value is. How do you treat your folks? And do you actually treat them like you say when you put up a job posting? Is it, are you giving people feedback? Are you listening to the employee voice? And so what I've seen a lot with clients is that COVID kind of disrupted stuff enough. Of course, it disrupted all of us, but just enough that people started paying attention differently. And if they weren't paying attention before, things were brought to their mind from or to their attention from their employees. And so it's really about meeting the person where they're at. And we saw a lot of that with all of the social injustice that's been going around and people starting to become more vocal. So it might look like, hey, you know, have you run an employee engagement survey? If you did you actually follow up on it? What is it telling you? Are there shifts you need to make? And a large part of that is change management and managing that accordingly as well. Of course, because of the intersections I live at, I'm very passionate about it. But as an HR practitioner, I also feel like we should always care about culture and we should always care about DEIB. And it's the little things. It's carving out 5 minutes on your agenda to make sure everybody's heard and they feel good about this and not canceling everything. It's not just like, you know, team building and beer and pizza. It's a lot of things, but it's really exciting work.
Yeah. And one thing that you touched upon, right? And as we look at those injustices or the big news items that have been happened throughout the course of, you know, especially the last few years, but, you know, course of our history, right? There's been a lot of violence and trauma and hurt and healing that needs to happen. And I think, you know, there was a day way back when employers said that part of you turns off when you come into the workplace. Mm-hmm. And I think as we start to move into this DEIB realm, this empathetic leadership, right, we're starting to realize that we can help create better work environments that help with that healing process and understand that these people are coming in with hurt, with pain, with challenges, right? And the company can do more than just say, you have to bottle that until you get back home.
Definitely. And, you know, a lot of people say too, that we forget about our abilities or our capabilities. And so, you know, part of HR is if you have an employee who is struggling, I'm often, you know, it's human nature to just be like, oh, let's look at the performance or this behavior is not desirable. There could be a lot of reasons why that's not going. Even if you look at this age we're at with technology, I still hear people saying, oh, you know, this person, you know, they don't come into the office as much. And so we worry about what are the opportunities, especially for women and folks who have historically been marginalized. Also, are we thinking about when we're looking at these things, folks who might be differently abled, who might not, you know, there's a lot of ableism that goes on as well. And so we can help support with accommodations or having a conversation, but that's where it comes back to just leaning into the humanity and not just assuming this person's not doing it because they don't want to, or they're not good at their job. They might just need a little extra support. And that's where HR can help be a guide for leaders and organizations too.
Yeah. And that's interesting. I love that you bring that up because, you know, this leads into more of that. We're more than task drivers. We're more than task managers, right? Because I remember being in corporate HR and, you know, an employee, a manager would come and say, this employee has a attendance issue or they're having a performance issue. And rather than being like, okay, let's look at the history and let's move to termination and do all that, I'm like, did you ask them what's going on? Like, did you actually ask the question of like, why there's been a change? Why is it? How can we help you? And oftentimes from an HR perspective, what we get is I have a family member who's sick. I have, you know, something is impacting me or it's, you know, I'm dealing with this thing at home, right? And then we can use our resources in HR, FMLA, you know, counseling, whatever else to say, well, why don't we get you some support, right? Versus taking this approach of like, you're not doing your job. So that's it. Our hands are clean.
Exactly. Exactly. It's the people-centric approach, right? This is a person. A lot of times when we do these counselings and coachings with these leaders, they're like, oh, it's like so novel. They haven't heard of this before. And or they ask the questions and it's like, oh, well, you know, this is what was going on. And it's like, that's why we ask the question, because you just don't know. We're making assumptions otherwise.
Mm. Yeah, it's really great. And you mentioned, you know, change management. And, you know, it's interesting because a lot of company leaders don't like change, right? Historically, that's been the case. Change is scary, change is bad, change is dangerous, whatever it is. And I always tell the job seekers I support, I'm like, ask whoever you're interviewing, when was the last time they made change? What was it? What was the big change that they made? And if they're not making it, they're probably not moving forward, right? And so that's the thing you have to consider is that okay with you or not, right? But in terms of that change management, we have to be living in a state of change all the time. If you read any of the change management books, John Cotter, any of them, they're going to tell you, you have to be in change management constantly. And I assume that's what you're telling your clients as well.
Yes. And we, you know, I'm grateful that I have clients who do care about DEIB. Every single one of them cares. Most of them were working on it before, you know, whether it's through another consultant or their own efforts internally. I get the pleasure of helping one stand up a DEIB task force, and that's been super exciting and fun. So either they're working on it before and they always, you know, cared about their employees, which is amazing. So I feel like with my clients, they're, you know, we're already in a good space, but people don't always understand all of the things that go into change management and that, you know, there's an order of operations of how we do it, how we explain the change. And if we explain the change properly, makes a difference. How do we make it stick? What are the tools and resources? Are there any gaps? There's so many considerations. Who finds out first and how does that all work? And how do we communicate that? What's the communication plan? And so it's really exciting.
That communication part I love, because I was working in HR and, like I said, one of my corporate roles that I had more recently. And I, as the HR person, found out big news at the same time as the rest of the employees through an email. And, you know, the challenge there was they're going to come to me to ask me for clarification, for further information, especially because it was like a big organizational change. And they would come to me and I'm like, I know as much as you know, right? But like, that doesn't help. That's why in terms of that communication plan, especially when you're making changes, there needs to be sort of a rollout. And there are going to be people who have to know first, but how are they then disseminating that information in a way so that people that need to find out about it early on don't find about it at the same time as everybody else and have to, you know, handle the questions and the challenges that come in from that?
Yes, I empathize. It's happened to me more than once. And you're like, you have the employee who shows up at your door and you're like, I don't know what they're talking about. Let me play this off. Like, what are we doing? Like, I want to help. And that's the thing is our role is such a supportive role in so many more ways than transactional. So it benefits people to really bring us in sooner because there might be other considerations. And I've had that happen. Like, oh, well, now I'm just finding out and here's the employee at my door. And I probably would have done this way, but you know, now here we are. And so it becomes transactional and reactive and you now have to recover. Whereas our job is to really help to paint leadership in the organization in a good light and position them well. And we can't do that if we're behind. And I always make this joke, like HR is always the last to know because so many times it has happened to me.
Well, and you know, I've had that, and I'm sure you have too, where a manager comes to you and like, all right, I want to fire this person. And you're like, since when? Like, yes. What all of a sudden happened? And you're like, have you been documenting this? You haven't come to say anything to me. And they're like, no. Like, well, you can't just determine you want to fire them. Yes, we're at will, but like, that doesn't mean you can just up and fire somebody. Going back to the DEIB, right? Like, are we giving them equal opportunity? Are we handling this, asking them how we can help them? Are we providing them support? You can't just be like, oh, you're done, bye. You know, unless there's something seriously egregious. But in most cases, you have to really walk through a plan of termination. You can't just sort of say, okay, we're firing you because you have poor performance, but we're never told you had poor performance.
Yes, it should never sneak up on anyone that they're being terminated, disciplined, that there's an issue. I mean, that's, and some leaders have a hard time with understanding that how much of your role and your responsibility is people. It's not the title you have. It's not reporting to, if you're a director, it's not reporting to the VP. Yes, those things matter too. But when you are a people leader, you have a responsibility to those folks. And that means that you have to ask the right questions and that we have to give the feedback, because how would you feel if that happened to you, right? And then second, that person deserves the opportunity. One of the other things this reminds me of is that people often think that a performance improvement plan is so that we can get rid of someone. And it's like, no, that's a corrective measure. That's why we call it performance improvement plan. The goal is for them to improve. We should never be doing things at the outset with the intent of hiring people. And so I'm always have my eyes and ears open and my tentacles, my feelers up to make sure I'm listening. The active listening is a software value as well. And to make sure that I'm doing the listening, if I'm hearing something that's like, I think we need to explore this and ask some more questions. Because again, where's the documentation? And yes, we're asking because it protects you and the organization, but that employee deserves better than that.
Yeah. And I love the active listening piece. I do improv. I'm a big proponent of active listening. But again, going back to HR, I mean, when we're sort of this intermediary, and that's what we really become. We're sort of the middle ground between, you know, providing a really great candidate experience or employee experience, right? And, you know, helping sort of drive the initiatives of the organization from a, you know, the company perspective and making sure that both sides are, you know, operating legally and doing all of those things. But, you know, we have a lot of responsibilities. And I really think part of that is just making, you know, we have to listen to everybody all the time, right? We have to listen to the employees. You have to listen to the managers, you listen to the leaders. And then it's our job to say, okay, how do we piece all of these things together so that the greater good is benefiting?
Mm-hmm. Yes. We have a difficult job. And, you know, the reality is, and I'm sure you've talked to other colleagues too, we may have even talked about this at one point, we're just burning out, especially since COVID. It's been really difficult. And a lot of that is because people don't understand all of the things that we have to pull together. You're listening on all sides because that's how we make a complete picture. And it becomes a lot. We're supporting on all sides and we need some support too, and folks to pour into us as well.
Absolutely. So let's trickle back to the DEIB because I want to get some of your thoughts on if there's an organization who has not implemented DEIB yet, where do you recommend that they start? Do you recommend like ERGs? Do you recommend, you know, affinity groups? What is it? Where do you think that they can start to build a DEIB platform for themselves?
What a great question. And I think it depends on the organization. I will say for sure, doing an organizational readiness assessment. So typically you probably want somebody outside of the organization to help support those efforts because we as organizations, we know our cultures, we know our teams, but there are gaps that we might not always see. And so even when I'm doing that with my clients, just under regular, hey, we're just meeting each other. Let me understand what's going on in your organization, whether or not we have a more narrow focus on DEI with the client I'm working with, I'm always looking at it with that broad stroke to see like what's happening and have you thought about this? So I would say looking at that for sure to make sure you're ready. Are people ready to receive the change? Because I have seen where people are like, why are we doing this? Why is this a focus? There's a lot of language out there in this world that people don't understand. And so we hear the term woke bounced around a lot. I've even had, you know, my clients say, you know, can you help us break this down? Here's what people think about this. What do you really think? How do we kind of break down some of, you know, what people might be thinking about that? It might be like the client I'm doing the DEI task force, we're helping stand that up. And part of that is, you know, she did a lot, the president with, yes, I said she, so amazing. So did a lot with listening to the stakeholder voice and what is the community saying? What does, you know, what do they want? What are they hearing? How are people perceiving your organization? And I think that boils down to also, what are your employees saying in the organization? And do you have a good pulse on that? Do you have good tools to measure that? So whether you're doing a DEIB survey or an engagement survey, a lot of those questions can overlap. And you could get at some similar type information, but it's also as leadership and team, what are you doing internally to make sure that this isn't just something that we're going to say, we're going to put this on the website, or we want to pull certain employees because it looks good for, you know, PR or marketing to post their faces up. Are those the voices we're listening to? So I'm always trying to understand what is that? And are you measuring different things, right? Those are some of the things that I encourage people to think about and that we work through. And yes, it could include workshops and training, but I caution people that that is not the be all end all. People use the word training in very loose ways. And not everything that is someone in front of you is training. that's not how it works, but it's also not the only way or the best way necessarily every time to get through and send a message.
Yeah, and I was actually going to talk a little bit about that. So, you know, one of the things I think for particularly for companies where you're talking about, maybe they don't understand the terminology, maybe they are on like, why are we doing this, right? Maybe a good place for them to start is education. How do we provide education on anti-racism conversations, about microaggressions, about macroaggressions, about LGBTQ community, and how we should speak and interact, right? How we handle neurodiversities in the workforce, and really start educating them on what these things mean. You know, as you mentioned, you know, not fully abled or differently abled, right? You know, having conversations about what these things mean and really training on definition, how we can avoid these things coming up in the workplace versus just having like a training where it's like, this is good, this is bad, don't do this, right? Like, that's very basic and it's nice, but we want people to feel engaged and understand like, okay, I didn't know that what I was saying was, you know, was a macroaggression or a microaggression. What can I say differently, right? And letting the people in the room who may be in that group say, we can have a conversation about that, right? And like work through some of these challenges that might already be present that you could knock away. So I think that those are some great ways that maybe we could also do that.
Yeah, I love that you said that. Education is a piece and is key. So definitely making sure people understand that we all have bias, because that's the hard thing for people too. Like, well, I didn't mean to. And then they kind of shut down and it's like, everybody makes mistakes, right? Helping people understand that language and the terminology is part of that. So whether your organization feels like it's ready now, or maybe you do need a little bit of that baseline training. And for me, I always think it's important to put those definitions in there to bring them to the forefront, so people are aware. And I love scenarios. I've been using them a lot in my own workshops and training, and people like them because I use real life examples. This is what I've seen over my 15 years in HR. This is what I've heard from different clients out there being out in the world. And people love those because it allows them as groups to work through a situation and talk to each other and perspective share. And it's so healthy.
And I think that perspective share also opens a door to say, if I have a challenge like this in the future, I now have a resource I can go to, or I now have a person who I trust to give me information, right? And so it makes better co-working relationships because there's trust and communication and empathy sort of in these conversations. I love the scenario pieces too, because I think you learn a lot, and particularly as you're educating on your own biases, right? And I talk a lot about biases in my last few episodes. We've talked about it a lot. Because we all have locked-in biases. And, you know, I can say primarily I grew up in a white community, right? And so there were things like people in my town are like, racism doesn't exist. And I was like, I'm sorry, where do you live? And then I was like, oh, right, here. And so because we don't have a community where that's prevalent, they just think it doesn't exist. And I'm like, it's okay for you to say, maybe I don't understand, right? But not to be defensive in the fact that like, well, I'm not, you know, I'm not being racist, or I'm not saying anything that's inappropriate. It's like, well, you are, right? And that's okay, as long as you're willing to learn, as long as you're willing to educate and change your perspective or learn something new and not sort of be stuck in that way. So knocking down that bias because of your upbringing, because of how you were raised, because of whatever else, traumas, experiences, right? That is important in creating, you know, cultures that are inclusive across the board.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I know that you're also passionate about advancing sort of the profession of HR. And so as you look at sort of what roles are coming up, right? I mean, there's so many things that are coming new to HR, right? We talked about the people operation side. They're probably even going to be revamping recruiting coming up with sort of the AI model now in there. I imagine you're somebody who's, you know, very interested in helping new and up and coming HR people to really help advance that profession and really develop some of those new opportunities for them.
I am. And I'm so, this is why I love when somebody says, hey, somebody is, you know, they're getting ready to graduate with their degree, or they're considering a career in HR, or they're considering moving into consulting. Maybe they're working in HR. And I love getting those calls, text, emails, LinkedIn messages. And I'm like, yes, please. It's like, I'm a kid in the candy store, like, bring them to me. I want to hear what they have to say. Plus, it's fresh perspective. I've been in the field for 15 years. And so sometimes working with other folks who are learning in different ways and who are learning, you know, after post-COVID and during COVID and just with AI and technologies, I'm always hungry to learn that. And so mentoring is a big space where I play a role for folks in HR as well. And I love those conversations. They're so rich and I can learn from what other folks are hearing and seeing, whether they're working in corporate or what they're doing. And then also I can share, here's my experiences, because there are some core things in HR that just don't change, right? We can't ask certain illegal questions, that certain things might change, like salary, right? We're learning you shouldn't necessarily in certain states, or criminal backgrounds, all these different things. So there are some things that are static, but there are so many more things that have so much opportunity for creativity and growth and the way we can embrace technology and change it. And I am just here for what's next for us. It's a very, very, we're at a pinnacle point, I feel like.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, as I mentioned, right, we're getting all these new titles. I mean, when I was growing up, right, there wasn't a DEIB person. There wasn't, you know, these, and whether that's, you know, DEIB on the LGBTQ side, right, whether it's, you know, other areas, there wasn't all these different titles that were part of HR. And so it's nice to see as the profession grows and expands that there's opportunities to have people who are focused in one particular category or another, right? As you mentioned, HR does a lot. We do everything from hiring and firing. And I've worked in small HR companies my entire career. And that means that you're literally doing everything, payroll, the whole bit. And so it's nice to have these specialties coming in to say, listen, we already have enough on our plate that's burning us out. Let's have this specialist who has a really unique skill set and a really specific understanding of this function. Yeah, I can do it, but they can do it better. Right. Mm-hmm. And really getting through to C-suite executives that, sure, I can do everything, but it's much better if I don't have to, because then I have the capacity to dedicate my time to something equally as important.
Mm-hmm. Especially when you're talking about, because I've worked in the small business too, it's like employee relations, payroll, benefits, you have to be on like the steering committee for the 401k. And you're like, but I already administered the benefits. And then I have to make the postings. I got to plan the monthly luncheons, and we have to do everything, right? And so it's important to have those different, now every company can't do that. I understand that, but where there can be, because when you look at like compensation and benefits, there's so much compliance that goes into that. There's so much just, you know, work comp. And even now my clients, you know, if something happens, I'm like, ooh, not it. Like, I can help guide you, and I'll talk to your broker and your insurance company. We can figure it out. But it's helping. That's part of our job as we move this evolution of who we are, our identity as HR now and into the future, and even who we were when we started out as industrial revolution in HR, figuring that all out. And it has to come along and make sense. And we can't be everything, because we're never going to know all those nitty gritty details like a specialist would. And I personally intentionally wanted to be a business partner and a generalist because I wanted to soak it all in. I did want to know a little bit about everything. It doesn't mean I wanted to do everything though.
Well, yeah. And, you know, I've been in the, you know, generalist business partner space as well. But one of the things that I always said was, you know, I shouldn't be the person teaching DEIB, right? I can talk about it all day and I can be an advocate and an ally and I can agree with the principles and the core of it, but I can't speak from somebody who is in a marginalized group. Right. I can speak from the equity part from being a female, but other than that, right, that really should be left to people who have real world experiences to bring to that from marginalized groups, from oppressed groups, that they can bring and say, this is what, you know, DEIB really should look like. Right. And so for me, you know, having that unique specialty brings a whole different level than if I'm just talking about it. Right. And they can bring different scenarios in that are really unique to the organization. So I love that. I'd love for you to share, you know, we talk about that belonging piece, right? Can you emphasize a little bit, what does that belonging piece mean, right? I know everybody understands what belonging somewhere means, but when we're looking at it from a workplace, what does that really cover?
It's so interesting that you asked that, Alisa, because people are always like, what's the difference between inclusion and belonging? Aren't they similar? And there is some overlap. There's some similarity, but I describe it in terms of, you know, I've had experiences in my workplace where, yeah, I got included in the meeting, but did I feel like I belonged when I got there? Maybe I was the only female in the room and my voice wasn't being heard. I wasn't taken seriously. My ideas were stolen, or I wasn't given credit for them, or people kept interrupting me. That is not a situation that causes someone to feel like they belong. And so, you know, even I've been, you know, the only female and walked in and all the men are talking about something and they stop talking when I come around and no one's really filling me in on what's going on. And so those are different, you know, just a couple different examples that I've encountered, but it's, you know, making sure that just because you include somebody on a project or a meeting or in the company happy hour or a luncheon, that doesn't mean that they feel like there's a space for them, because we can have meetings all day where there are people who are like, I don't feel like I had a voice in that meeting, right? It's like giving, meeting people where they're at, making sure they have a voice. Have you heard their voice? Do you know that they have everything that they need to succeed? Because if people are coming in and they have these traumas, we don't want work to be another layer of that. We don't want workplaces to ruin people, as I described, at the end of the day. And so if it's a place where they feel like I can get along with people, I have support. That's why I ask managers to ask in their one-on-ones, what else could I be doing to support you? Because there's other, you know, activities that maybe you might be missing. And if you're creating psychological safety, that's another way that people can feel like they belong. Is it okay if I make a mistake and then I bring it forward and I'm not going to be, it's not going to be punitive, or they're going to try to fire me when we haven't even documented, or this has never happened before? Is there going to be a space where we explore together? Or where I'm given the benefit of the doubt if I do make an error? What happens if my opinion, my perspective is different than my leader's? Is that going to be okay? Or am I going to get told, as I have many times, basically stay in your lane? That's not for you. It's below your, you know, above your pay grade. And so those are, you know, things that we can do that we can really disrupt or enhance someone's environment and really the culture.
And so going back to that, I mean, you mentioned, right, you can have inclusivity and not belonging. Can you have belonging without inclusivity?
I don't think you can. I don't think you can belong. I've never been asked that way around. Thanks for keeping me on my toes. I don't, because how do you belong somewhere if you're not really included? You can't really be in a space where you feel like, this is it, I'm really, you know, this is the place to be. I love my job. I have support of my peers. If you're not receiving information, you're being left out of things, your voice is not included, people don't care what you think, that's going to be really difficult. If you're not getting the tools you need to do your job, because we know that sometimes those politics are at play sometimes too. It's like who you know as to which opportunities you get. If you don't include me in those types of things, then I definitely don't feel like I belong.
Yeah, the only thing I had heard that sort of touched on the belonging without inclusivity is a teacher was saying, I belong here because I have the knowledge, the skill set, and the passion to be a teacher, right? And so when you think about it from like that sense of belonging, right? I belong in HR because I love HR, I know HR, right? I have the knowledge, but maybe I don't feel included in the HR communities, right? So I think that that could be the only key that sort of is a differentiating factor, is you feel like you belong in this passion, but maybe not included enough to make the decisions or to be in part of whatever else is going on.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair, because I mean, I've seen that happen in HR. I've been like, I think I'm supposed to be in leadership, but you're not including my ideas. So I feel like I belong in HR because I love it. And it is my passion log. It's my purpose. So that's a good perspective. This is why we have these conversations, right? Perspective sharing. I love it.
And you mentioned psychological safety. And so you gave a good, you know, sort of explanation about what that was. But for people that don't know, it's really exactly as it sounds, right? As you mentioned, you know, do people feel safe to make mistakes, ask questions, express their feelings, their opinions, their concerns, right? Do they feel like their neurodiversities are recognized, right? All of those things. And I had this great woman who was on a podcast with me, and she was talking about how, you know, you don't always have to be in the meeting and participate in the meeting to have great ideas, right? Mm-hmm. And so she said, I have an employee who I know has a neurodiversity, They don't want to speak up in meetings. So I go with them back to their office and I say, what great ideas do you have? Because she's like, I know that they're cooking in there. But if I said on the spot, hey, share your ideas, that's not helping them in their neurodiversity. And so I think that that's part of that psychological safety. And part of that real work you have to do to be a manager and a leader is understanding each of the people that you that work, you know, for you and with you, right? Mm-hmm. To say, how can I help this person that might be different than how I have to help this person? Exactly. And that's creating that psychological safety piece.
Yeah. And that's the DEIB piece, because even if we are, you know, we seem similarly situated, I learn very differently than you learn. And we have worked in different companies. We live in different states. There's very much, there's so many layers to diversity. And one of the ones that is missing so often is just the diversity of thought, understanding that people work differently, appreciating and working with each other's work styles, which is like a huge part of why culture gets so jacked up, because people are like, no, my ideas are right. Mine are right. Guess what? You can both have space to be right. And you can learn different things from people. I was this morning heard my husband, I went to go like grab a beverage and heard him like on a call. And I was like, wow, like listen to all these great ideas being shared. And if they wouldn't have done that, they wouldn't know what is going on in the other parts of the organization. And I was like, oh, I'm so jamming out on this. I got to go back upstairs. But that's the stuff that lights me up, because we need to have those conversations. We need to cross collaborate and understand different perspectives and ideas. That is how companies become creative and innovate. It becomes their competitive advantage. It lights your team up. Like then they're engaged and they feel like you care and you want their great ideas because you take the time to come back to their office to solicit those. I mean, that is just, it's just an exciting thing when that happens.
And, you know, I love what you were saying in terms of, you know, when you were listening to your husband and, you know, they've got all these great ideas flowing and you're like, hey, I want to go sit in their meeting, right? Because it's just super exciting. You know, but even when we look at employees, right? You said that they all have differences, and that's so true. And I love the diversity of thought piece. I'm always preaching diversity of thought. You know, I joke, like when I hire people, I don't want people like me. I want people who challenge me every day, who say, have you thought about it this way? Let's try it this way, right? Like, because that's what my competitors are doing. That's what my clients are doing, right? And so I have to always be sort of on my toes and thinking, what can be done differently? And to your point about that diversity of thought, a lot of organizations, like it's everybody's in the same marching order and we're all going the same direction. And it's like, then you have these few outliers that are asking the questions about like, well, what if we go over here? What if we go over like, and those are the people that, again, it really opens up the room to say, let us all participate in an idea share. Let us all participate in the conversation, because we can all bring unique aspects to the table that maybe you're not thinking of. Right. And that diversity of thought piece is so powerful and incredible. And that also leads into the diversity of communication. I mean, generationally, if we look across them, right, you know, the way Gen Z communicates is not the same way that baby boomers communicate, not just from a verbal interaction, right, you know, on the computer, through text message, through TikTok, wherever they're communicating. I'm not that far removed and I still don't know where they're communicating.
You and me both.
But so in the terms of like, you know, even the way that they hear things, even the way that they digest information, right? And so that's where, you know, as you said, we're all focused on diversity of people and the characteristics that make them different or unique or that create diversity. But we're not digging into that diversity of thought. And are we giving everyone equal perspective to say, I have a thought?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's back to the psychological safety, because so many times, and this has happened to me in consulting even, where I'm in some certain spaces and I'm like, I don't feel like I have been invited to have a space or like I can have a voice, or there's so many, it's busy in the room, right? Like whether it's Zoom or out there in the world where certain voices dominate, and we have to do a better job at creating that belonging, creating the inclusivity, so that when someone else has an idea, even if that idea might be one of the outliers and different, like, ooh, can we do it this way? Can we explore? That they feel safe to even speak up. Because honestly, as a Black woman, there are times that, and I run my own company, right? where I'm just like, I am too exhausted. Like, I'm not fighting for room, space in a room. And it happens a lot where I'm like, now my ideas are behind, you know, my Tiffany wall, because I have not had space to share them. Now, sometimes you can go back and say, hey, I had this idea, you know, I really want to share. But other times, maybe it gets covered. And so then it's okay. But there's still not enough recognition from what I'm observing to even notice that you're taking up too much space. And it doesn't matter if you're a room full of people who all seem similarly situated. Everybody gets excited about their ideas. And I'm not, you know, saying it's coming from a place of malice, but that is one thing that I really wish people would just observe, because it does get really, really exhausting.
And, you know, I love your unique perspective, because I can tell you that there's probably not a lot of, and this is not a slight, not a lot of white men who are like, I'm not going to say that because I don't feel comfortable. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. You know, you bring in that perspective of being a Black woman. Something you say might be like, well, she's being aggressive, or, you know, she's being too assertive, or, you know, like, oh, well, we heard you, but yeah, okay, like brushing it off, right? And it's not the same for every person in the room. That's not the mm-hmm. same feeling that everybody has. And we have to be able, in that diversity of thought piece, to recognize, hey, there's a difference here. Like, you know, Tiffany hasn't said any ideas in any of the meetings we've been in, right? Let me go talk to Tiffany, and like, because I know she usually has something to bring to the table. And then you can have conversations about, like, do you feel safe to say this at a meeting? And if not, like, how do we help you get there? Because I want you to feel safe to be able to say what you think or what ideas you have without feeling like you have to put up your Tiffany wall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I actually, there was someone who did this really well, white man. A couple weeks ago, we were in a meeting, and he's like, you know, he reached out to me separately and said, I saw you nodding. It seemed like you were in agreement. I don't want to make that assumption. But he said, I also wanted to, you know, hear, he's like, I realized it was two of us white men, and we took up, you know, some space. And I feel, you know, a little bad about that. And I want to know, like, if you had thoughts. He's like, I saw you nodding, but I don't know if you felt like you had a space to share. And I was like, whoa, like, I just wasn't expecting it. And I was actually fine. I was like, I was at the moment soaking it in, and they both shared amazing perspectives. They're the experts in their field. So I didn't have anything to add, but I thought, wow, how nice, what a nice touch if I did. And so I said, oh, you're all good. Like, everything's good, but thank you so much for thinking about that. Cause there are times where that space just isn't there. And I'm like, well, it would have been nice to be invited to do that. Or like, how did nobody realize, like, I'm the only person who doesn't look like everybody else in this room, you know, whether it's gender or ethnicity, race, whatever, that you just hope that you don't always have to be the one doing the work, right?
Right.
So I really appreciated it when he reached out.
But I love that you had that experience, honestly, because it just shows that, you know, not only did he recognize and have the awareness to say something, like, she didn't interact as much as I expected her to, but also, like, I recognize we took up space and you didn't. How can I rectify that? Right. Like, the fact that there was this growth and this opening, it makes me say, like, oh, that person is probably a really great leader. Right. They're probably very empathetic, very psychologically safe leader, because they're recognizing those things in front of them.
Yeah. And he's like, if you did have ideas, I want to hear them. And I was like, why can't everyone do this? This is amazing.
You're like, can you just coach every person on this process? That's so funny. So in terms of, you know, your, I know you talked about, like, having ways to effectively engage and retain talent. And so part of that culture aspect is, you know, really creating, you know, or part of that aspect of engaging and retaining talent is creating a culture where they feel included, where they feel like they belong. So I think that that's an important piece, right? And it will help you engage and retain talent and create, you know, ROIs for those things like C-suites are always looking for. You know, so I love that you talk about that. And I love that that's what you're trying to teach, is like, this has value beyond just making people feel good, right? Mm-hmm. Or making people feel good have these perks to your organization.
Definitely. Yeah. And that's the piece where I think, you know, a lot of our executives are like, yeah, well, I mean, we're not saying we don't want people to feel good, but like, what else am I getting out of it? And it's like, let us count the ways. Let us count the ways. And we saw that, whether you like the term great resignation or whatnot, but that's, you know, our company started doing a lot of compensation and employee engagement and just different tools, because people were going, you don't want our employees to leave. Do we know what they're thinking? Or, you know, looking at their salary, like, is it competitive because of all the things that were going on? And I'll tell my clients, you're good. Like, you just keep, stay the course, do what you're doing, make sure that you're always, you know, listening to your employees, and you'll be good. But there are people who really fear this, you know, that there could be some people leaving, and the market out there is a little strange right now anyway, the talent market. So it's probably not sustainable in terms of like the salaries and stuff, but people really started paying attention, and we have to at least be noticing, right? So that we can expect proper change.
Well, and as you said, surveys aren't just about checking the box, we did the survey. It's, did you take anything from that survey? Did you actually accept the information that you got as truth, right? This was always the part that I impressed upon people, is you may not perceive, or you may not want to be perceived in the way that you came off, right? Or you may not have intended this initiative to look like this, but we have to accept the data as true, or at least one version of true, right? And if this data is true, what do we plan to do about it? Positive or negative, right? Do we want to disband this initiative because nobody likes it anyway? Do we want to make a change to it? Do we want to give them more opportunities to give their perspective on this particular idea? Whatever it is, but just doing the survey and then sort of doing nothing, right, is not building an inclusive culture. It's like, yeah, we got a voice, but nobody cared about our voice.
Yeah. I love the way you phrased, because our language is so important. So I just, words are my love language. So I like hone in. I also actively listen. But I love that you said, do you accept it as truth? And that is key too, because it's not always that people don't want to, but it's some, and I just did some 360s with a client. Sometimes it might be hard for us to hear people's constructive feedback, or that, whoa, how can as a leader, it be so disconnected from what I think the employees want. I don't feel that disconnected, but it's accepting it as truth. And you can have a follow-up, you know, you can do facilitated calls or meetings. The name of what I'm trying to say is escaping me right now, but focus groups. You can do that. And there are so many ways to continue to get more information. This is what we heard from you all, but we want to understand and dive deeper into it. But you do have to accept it as their truth.
Yeah. And I know even from like a leadership perspective, right? When we had surveys, it was like the leaders were like, but that wasn't my intention, or that's not how I wanted to be perceived. And I was like, whether it's what you wanted or intended, that's the truth of how you're being perceived, right? My dog's going to howl, I'm sorry. But that's the truth of being perceived, like of how you're perceived. And so we can argue all day about whether that was your intention or not, right? Just as we talked about with that race piece or the other biases you have, whether that was your intention or not, isn't necessarily the issue. The issue is this is what the truth of the matter looks like. And now you have to decide, do I want this to continue to be true, or do I want to change it?
Yeah.
That's what you have control over, not how other people perceive it.
Exactly. And we really want to dig into the why. Why did they feel that way? Is it that they didn't have a certain piece of information? Is it that they didn't feel included? Is it they were sitting in a meeting and no one asked for my opinion, or everybody talked around me and nobody else spoke up on my behalf? It can be so many things, because we also make assumptions about why that feedback was there. And I've watched leaders like freak out or like shut down or almost start to retaliate on people because of the opinions that they gave. And it's like, well, you asked, were you ready? It's like when somebody asks you if you're fine and you start crying, you're not okay. Well, you asked, you have to be prepared for that. Like a true response. That is authenticity all day.
Right. And to those leaders who sort of take it defensively, right? Think about that. Are you taking it defensively because you've heard something like this before, and now you're like, but I was doing it different than I was the last time, right? What you have to dig in and do the inner work to figure out, why is this making me defensive? Why am I getting upset about this? And then even you could go to the employee and say, you know, I'm really feeling like uneasy about this, right? Because I thought I had a different perspective. Can you tell me what made you feel this way and not come from the accusatory standpoint of like, well, what you said is wrong. Well, like you had said earlier today, right? We can both be true. Things, two people can be right and there can be multiple truths. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't mean that there's one version of the truth in these conversations and situations.
Exactly. Exactly.
So one of the other things you had mentioned is when we look at DEIB is the vision and sort of the values and the mission statement and all of those pieces. And I want to get your perspective on this, because for me, I think a lot of the times where those things start to get broken down, when you have leadership changes, right, in an organization, CEOs, whole C-suites, whatever it is, or you go through a merger or an acquisition, it's interesting because oftentimes the values, the mission, the values, the mission, and the like vision statement all stay the same. And I'm like, but those new people don't feel the same way as the people who started the business or as the former CEO. So why is it that that's not ever evolving like everything else? Why are we not reevaluating our vision and our values and our mission and saying, are these still true for the community that we have here? Right? This may have been what we started with, but has our culture changed enough that these are no longer what should be in place?
I wish other people would ask this question that you're asking. And some do. So we actually are working with one client and they just came up with their new vision statement. And it's been so fun the past several months. Usually the company that it is, like your mission and who you're trying to reach and stay in touch with, and you know, whose lives are you trying to impact, typically that's going to stay the same and pretty core. So maybe that doesn't shift when leadership does, but you know, the values sometimes, you know, it depends. Are you now offering a new service or product or something? Are there things you need to add? I myself have added a couple because I'm like, oh, you know, I'm really focused on community and I really haven't talked a lot about that. Agility and flexibility and embracing agile principles and not wasting things is important to me. And I want that to be out front as well. So I kind of have gone through this exercise myself in the last year. And then one of my partners, we work on the vision side with folks and values too. And so he's going to be working with me on re-articulating my vision. And those are things that as our businesses mature, as we gain new information from market, that we really have to be focusing on, because does it feel like the identity of the organization? And then those are the things that the culture is set on. So I do think that it needs to change. I'm not saying like go out there and change it all the time. Early on in the pandemic, I was helping a client too, and they were reworking their mission and kind of their vision and values. And they did this as a team. I helped support and facilitate. And it's just really cool work when you see people doing this kind of behind the scenes.
Yeah. And I think post-pandemic, like you said, we've learned a lot during the pandemic. Those of us that were vocal probably were even more vocal to say like things are not happening in the way that they should be. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, when we look at all the things that the pandemic taught us, right, about DEI, about belonging, about all of those pieces, right, those may be values that companies didn't have, that they're like, we've made improvements and these are now part of our core of who we are, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and you talked about with culture, I think a lot of times people make the mistake that the culture is what we tell it to be, right? So like, oh, we want to have a culture of DEI, right? We want to have, you know, those are our values. So we want that to be our culture. You can help inform and persuade culture, but the people who really make up the organization are bringing your culture to you, right? And so that's the hard part is like, you can say all you want, this is the culture we want to have, but are the people that work in your organization aligned with that culture, or are you trying to shoehorn them into a culture that doesn't work, right, for them or for the organization? And so that's where I feel like when you have this, like if you have, you know, new employees or the whole organization has sort of flipped on its head a little bit, it's like maybe these values no longer represent who we are because our workforce has changed so significantly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and if you, DEIB is a perfect example of gaining new information as we continuously learn are we feeling like this is part of our identity? Do we feel like people belong? Have we heard things from now our employees that we're like, I think we need to shift these values a little bit, because you're going to have a culture whether you want it or not. So they're very much have to be designed deliberately, for sure. But that's where, you know, it's going to exist. So it's like, how do you want to help craft it to where it ultimately goes?
And, you know, the one thing I know companies make the mistake of is they're like, we're going to put our vision or our values or our mission on a wall, and then that's how we're going to live them every day. And it's like, that's one piece of the puzzle, right? That's just sort of saying, hey, we did this thing, right? But like, are you incorporating those into your performance reviews? Are you incorporating them into the everyday meetings that you have? They have to be part of the DNA and not just plastered on a wall so that everybody believes them.
Right. And I mean, people, we walk past rooms in our homes all the time, right? And you're like, oh yeah, that painting's there, right? you forget. It has to be intentional and put into your meetings and your one-on-ones, your performance reviews, all those things, how you set pay, whether or not people know what your philosophy, your compensation philosophy is. There's so many different things that make such a difference that people don't always think about. And it's the little things. It's not even, it's the stuff that's free that is the most harmful often that you're not doing, versus like, oh, we don't have this huge budget, like this huge company. Well, you have a lot of other advantages that people, you know, that make you unique and why people want to be here. So it's like, celebrate those. We don't celebrate enough either, I feel like. There's a whole focus on productivity.
You know, people don't even realize the easiest free thing you can do is ask, how can I help you? And thank you, and say thank you, right? Like, yeah. Those are the, like, if managers would go out of their way more to say thank you, what you do is important and necessary and we appreciate it. And then also, how can I help you? I mean, you would see so much more engagement, so much more loyalty, right? So much more passion for the work because they have a voice. So I think we need to get to that. But with that being said, I want to switch over to you and say, if people wanted to find you, how can people find you?
Yes. So LinkedIn's probably the easiest way. I'm under Tiffany Castagno, or on my website, which is www.sefferconsulting.com. I'm also fairly active on Twitter as well.
That's exciting.
And X, what are we calling it now? I don't know.
X. Yeah. I'm like, I'm not trying not to use the platform as much as I can. In terms of, you know, I always ask this last question to everybody. People probably sick of hearing me say that Maya Angelou is my favorite poet ever, but it's still the truth. I wish I had had the opportunity to meet her, but I did not. And I regret that every day. But she had this fantastic quote that said, I've learned that people will forget what you said. People will forget what you did. But people will never forget how you made them feel. And I feel like for those of us in HR, right, this is really means, I think, at a different level. But can you tell me a time where you thought that was true for you, where maybe you remember how something made you feel, but maybe not the actions, the words that led to that?
I mean, I think honestly, the example I gave earlier was one, but also just, you know, I've had positive experiences with managers, leaders, mentors who really shaped who I became as an HR practitioner, as a leader myself, because they believed in me. And it's that there is a feeling that we associate with employee experience. It's why we call it experience. Work should hopefully be good feelings, but we're going to feel one way or the other. The reality is most of us are working because we need to financially. And of course, we want to do something that lights us up. And so for me, it's making sure that I'm always giving someone a good experience, that the way that people feel about me is reflective of in and of itself. And so I feel like I have to be a good role model for that too, because people do remember that. They remember when you went out of your way to help them. They remember that you were the person and maybe the only person who listened to them, where they felt like they had a voice. And to me, that just encompasses all things DEIB. Every single one of us wants and deserves to have a voice and to have that be heard. We just want to be heard, right? And seen and valued and appreciated. That's what I think of.
I love that you gave that example. And I will tell the whole community out there that, you know, Tiffany was really fantastic. I had met this wonderful woman, Tara, who was, you know, pursuing a career in DEI. She's getting her college degree in DEI, and I had the great privilege to give her a scholarship. But when I told Tiffany, she was like, how can I get connected with her? Like, how can I talk to her? And I know that that made a difference to Tara in, you know, everything that she was doing. And so I appreciated that. So Tiffany, you really do sort of, you know, walk that walk. You're not just saying, hey, I want to mentor people. Hey, I want to do this. You were like, how do I get my hands on talking to her? Like, how do I get her words in my ears? Right. That was basically like, I mentioned it, you know, in passing, and you were like, I need to talk to her. And it was great because you're both women of color. And I think that that perspective also really was great to have somebody who was more relatable, even, you know, had that representation piece. But it was great that you were willing to open your door to do that for her.
Yeah, we had such a great conversation. I said, I got to let Alisa know right now. And I think I emailed you like right after and was like, thank you so much. We had a beautiful conversation. And she too, her perspective is different. We have a lot in common, but she has different perspectives too. And it was just beautiful. So thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome. It. Well, thank you everybody for being here. It was another great episode. And as I end every episode, lead with empathy, act with kindness. Bye y'all. Thank you for listening to All People Podcast. If you enjoyed our show, I'd love for you to subscribe and leave a 5-star review. The work doesn't end here. If you want to keep the conversation going, find me on LinkedIn or Facebook, or visit my website, apeoplepartnerllc.com. Lead with empathy and act with kindness. Have a great day.